What's going on, Bulls fans? This is episode 2 of Bulls Gold, a Chicago Bulls podcast that will run through the past, present, and future of the Chicago Bulls. I am Edward Schuler, and we're coming off a busy weekend for the Chicago Bulls. Zach LaVine received a $78 million offer sheet from the Sacramento Kings, which the Chicago Bulls officially matched yesterday. Jaren Grant was also traded in a 3-team deal to the Orlando Magic, and Wendell Carter Jr. has been making a lot of waves in summer league action. First, we're going to start with Zach LaVine and his $78 million contract. The Sacramento Kings signed LaVine to an offer sheet on Friday for $78 million. The deal is over 4 years and annually pays LaVine about $19.5 million. The contract also includes some injury protection in the deal that will give the Bulls an out if Zach LaVine has problems with his left knee that he tore his ACL in a little bit over a year ago. So the Chicago Bulls officially matched that contract on Sunday, though we were informed that the Bulls plan to match the deal not too long ago after the Sacramento Kings officially signed him to an offer sheet. So the deal was very surprising in the fact that the Sacramento Kings actually went through with this. The Kings have a lot of guard depth on their roster. They have Buddy Hield, they have Bogdan Bogdanovic, but you also have to keep in mind that the Sacramento Kings are not an ideal free agent destination. So with their cap space right now, the Kings have been looking at players or young players who they can add to their roster who can help this youth movement this season. It also helps that the Kings don't have their own draft pick this year, which I believe is only protected if they win the lottery and finish number one overall. So inserting Zach LaVine into their lineup would have gave them, you know, another super athletic player who can put up points, who can play up-tempo basketball, and that seemed to be very appealing to the team. But for those same reasons, the Chicago Bulls also decided to match that offer for Zach LaVine. If we go back to yesterday's press release with the Chicago Bulls officially matching that contract, John Paxson talked about Zach LaVine's offensive skill set and how he's super athletic and how, you know, they believe in his upside and they believe in his potential as a player. So with that said, let's look at the future of this contract. We can talk about whether or not LaVine is overpaid or whether or not he will actually live up to the financial terms of this deal, but we strictly need to look at the likelihood that Zach LaVine can become a positive contributor for Chicago Bulls over the next 4 seasons. What the Bulls are banking on with this contract isn't necessarily the Chicago Bulls winning more games, I feel like, next season. I feel like the Bulls are still in a period where they are developing talent and they are more interested in development more so than, you know, getting a playoff berth in the Eastern Conference right now. So they want to see Zach LaVine take a big step as a player. They want to see Zach LaVine polish his skill more, become, you know, a smarter player, improve his shot selection, become a better defender. They want to see the detail in Zach LaVine's game start to show. Last season, LaVine returned from an ACL injury, and we talked about this in the last episode, but there's a difference between coming back to a team after you return from rehabilitation rather than returning from, you know, spending the entire offseason improving. And we saw that with LaVine last year, where he was very rusty, his shot selection was bad, and I feel like a lot of it had to do with the fact that he was compensating or overcompensating for the minutes limit that he was on. He was not playing back-to-backs. He was playing about 20 minutes per game. And he was only playing, I think, about the he played like what, half of the first quarter, a little bit of the second quarter, and come right out. Then they would repeat the same, minutes distribution in the second half. So, it was a minutes distribution that really did not allow for Zach to get in, you know, great sync. So I feel like the shot selection is something that he pressed on, where it was like, I need to get a certain amount of shots up during this time. And it just did not produce good results for LaVine, and it didn't produce good results for Chicago Bulls offense as well. So that's a big thing that we're going to have to look at next season. Does LaVine have the ability to do two things specifically? Or actually, we'll say three things. Does LaVine, one, have the ability to fit with Chris Dunn? And we talked about this again on the last episode, and Dunn and LaVine don't appear to be ideal fits next to each other. You look at Chris Dunn, who doesn't have a strong perimeter shot, and while he's not really, you know, Steve Nash in terms of, you know, distributing the ball to others, he's someone that can create for his teammates and get them the ball. And that's probably when he is at his best, when he is distributing. So Chris Dunn needs the ball to attack and to distribute. Without it, you're passing to him, you're getting an open jump shot, and Dunn has not yet proven himself as a perimeter shooter to make that shot respectable and dependable in the Bulls offense. So then you look at Zach LaVine, who is a very high volume player and needs the ball in his hands to get that volume. The only way that Zach LaVine can have positional value in the NBA right now is if he puts up a lot of points efficiently. He doesn't really add anything defensively. He's not a bad rebounder, but he's not a strong rebounder either. So you're strictly looking at Zach LaVine as, can you get me 20 points and can you do it efficiently? And then on the defensive end, is it worth the 20 points that you just gave me? Are you making too many mistakes? Are you losing your man off the ball? You know, are you not rotating quick enough? Do you have the awareness? A lot of times last season, we saw Zach LaVine ball watching. So those are two of the big things with LaVine that we'll have to watch in this contract. Does he fit with Chris Dunn? Can he become a net positive? Can he score efficiently? Can he get back to the efficient levels that he was in his third season in Minnesota, where I believe he had a true a TS percentage of maybe a little bit above 57%, which is very good. Now, the difference is he's in Minnesota, he was playing behind Andrew Wiggins. He was playing behind Karl Anthony Towns. And he was playing a little bit more off ball next to Ricky Rubio as well. When you come to Chicago, there isn't that structure there where there's already, you know, more talented players in front of you. There's Lauri Markkanen, who we've heard reports of the Bulls want to build their offense around him and his unique skill set. But at the same time, you also now have Zach LaVine, who is, you know, talent-wise, the best offensive player on the Bulls. Now, that may be a good or bad thing. We'll have to find out. But that's the simple reality of what this team is working with right now. They do not have a player that can create off the dribble, put the ball on the floor, shoot off the dribble, attack the basket, and do it so athletically like Zach LaVine. So that could be a part of why the Bulls prioritize keeping him. Reportedly, they were negotiating around $18 million for Zach LaVine, and Sacramento offered about $1.5 million. And the injury protection was seen as, you know, a coup for the Bulls because they were reportedly afraid to offer that protection in the deal because they didn't want to scare away Zach LaVine and kind of tarnish that relationship. But the wrinkle, or maybe the irony on top of that, is that when LaVine signed the offer sheet with Sacramento, he spoke to Mark Spears of The Undefeated on ESPN And I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but he says something to the tune of, I guess Sacramento wanted me more than Chicago did. And that left some fans, you know, kind of questioning where LaVine's mindset was, you know, returning to Chicago. You know, is he coming back a little bitter? Is he coming back with too big a chip on his shoulder? You know, is he coming back, you know, with kind of a wrong mentality? And have the Bulls damaged any sort of relationship with Zach LaVine? Now, after matching that, or after LaVine's deal was matched, LaVine downplayed all of that to the media and insisted that he's in a great place in Chicago. He wants to be here. He's glad he's back with the teammates and things like that. So he's saying the right things now. But for a brief moment, there was some questioning about, you know, LaVine, and that when we talk about LaVine and his basketball IQ and his intangibles, I guess some fans are kind of relating it to that. So the Bulls are very much committed now to Zach LaVine over the next 4 years as an integral part of this rebuild. And that's for better or worse. So I can see both sides of it. I can see why they decided to keep him. And I also can see why a lot of people did not want the Bulls to match his offer. I tend to fall on the side of not matching the offer for LaVine. Again, close to $20 million is a lot of money for someone who hasn't proven that they're a positive contributor. And even though I will not doubt LaVine's upside, he's a very talented player, just a very dynamic offensive skill set. And who knows, he could become an all-star player. It's possible to happen. It's very possible. But it's a hard thing to kind of to bet on when you just haven't seen anything out of him yet that leads you to believe that he can. Is there a Victor Oladipo breakout coming? Is there a Jimmy Butler type breakout coming? I think that's one of the scenarios that fans are wondering. Again, we go back. How likely is improvement? And you can bring up stats like, you know, RPM to, you know, show you how detrimental Zach LaVine has been to winning over his career. And when you go through the history of that stat, you'll also see, you know, the players like Jimmy Butler and Victor Oladipo, who, while they weren't stars, you know, before their big season, you can see that they had a positive impact on winning games, even being on bad teams. And that's something that Zach LaVine has yet to show. So moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see how LaVine handles the offense next season, how he comes into the season with training camp under his belt, with preseason under his belt, with more time to play with the starters and interact with them and build some chemistry. That's going to be interesting to watch. Also over the weekend, Jaren Grant was traded to the Orlando Magic in a three-team deal with the Charlotte Hornets. I believe the Charlotte Hornets received Bismack Biyombo, who's going to be making his second stint in Charlotte. And they also received a couple of second-round picks. Orlando received Timofey Mozgov in addition to Jaren Grant. And the Chicago Bulls received Julian Stone, who has a non-guaranteed contract that the Bulls already have waived, I guess. So essentially, this deal boils down to the fact that the Chicago Bulls did not see Jaren Grant having a role with the team next season. They essentially cleared his salary off the payroll this season, and they also, in a year in advance, just took his cap hold, which I think would have been about $3.7 million if they, you know, had offered or they gave him a tender on his rookie contract. That would have been worth $3.7 million, and that's gone now. So they're all in on Cameron Payne being the backup point guard, and if Payne doesn't work out, you know, I guess Denzel Valentine can also run backup point if you need to. Or Chicago may sign a cheaper third guard as well into the mix. I don't know. But My thing about Jaren Grant is this, and it may be unpopular opinion, but I've always liked Jaren Grant. He's not a bad player by any means. He's not very flashy. He's not exciting. He doesn't have great upside. He's probably not an ideal starter for a team. He's going to Orlando, a team that doesn't really have great point guard options right now. I think they had DJ Augustine as their starter before this, and I imagine he probably will be still now. But, I mean, there's a chance that Jaren Grant could start in Orlando. Reportedly, Steve Clifford is a big fan of Jaren Grant's size and his defensive ability. So there's definitely a role for Jaren Grant in Orlando, much more than it was in Chicago. But the thing to me about Jaren Grant that I've always noticed is that despite him not being flashy, despite him not being exciting or possessing any type of elite NBA skill in any category, Jaren Grant is just steady. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. He can defend his position adequately. His three ball is very, you know, it's not that good. I think last season he shot about 32, maybe 33%. Maybe the season before he shot 36%. But I think, and I don't have any stats to support this at all, but I think that Jaren Grant is a better catch and shoot three-point threat than off the dribble. And what I noticed the season before last is that Jaren Grant seemed to fit well next to a ball dominant guard like Jimmy Butler or even Dwayne Wade. He just seemed to fit well. He didn't have to handle the ball as much. He could play off the ball. He could defend his position. And when he had a wide open three, it just looked better. It looked more comfortable for him to make that shot rather than Jaren Grant, you know, as he was in the earlier part of last season with Chris Dunn out. Jaren Grant was bringing the ball up the floor. He was running offense. He was trying to create for others. He was trying to run plays. And I feel like that's just not Jaren Grant's game. He's not someone you would call a pure point guard or somebody that you would want to, you know, get open looks for everybody. He's more of an off-ball guard. And I think that's the role that he can excel in if a team can put him in that position. But regardless of that, he has never really hurt this Bulls team. He hasn't made it drastically better, but he never made it worse either. He was just a very neutral player. And the RPM numbers will definitely suggest that. I think the Bulls leader in RPM last year, outside of Mirotić, who's in New Orleans now, was Justin Holiday. And these two were very close. The second and third leaders in RPM on the team are very close. I think maybe by like 0.2 off. But it's either Jaren Grant or Bobby Portis. And that says a lot to me. Again, even on a bad team, very bad team last year, Jaren Grant was still a neutral contributor. It speaks volumes. Again, I like Jaren Grant. I think he's underappreciated, and I wish him a lot of luck in Orlando. I think John Paxson did him a great favor by sending him to a team that, you know, pretty much has an open point guard competition. But I just always found it interesting that Jaren Grant just never really, you know, and I understand it because, again, he's not flashy. He's not exciting. But, hey, he never hurts your team. He's a worthwhile backup. I would prefer him over Cameron Payne, who I think has proven a lot less in the NBA. But, you know, so from that standpoint, I'm not a huge fan of his deal. But at the very least, you know, for the people who are attached to the idea of chasing big free agents next year, this kind of adds a little bit of fuel to that fire, even though I just don't see it happening. So Jaren Grant in Orlando now, no longer on the Bulls. But Bulls fans may have a player to actually get behind now in the number 7 pick, Wendell Carter Jr. Now, I'm a huge fan of Wendell Carter Jr. Just a fantastic player with great overall instincts. I liked him a lot through the pre-draft process. I liked him a lot watching college basketball last season. Just a player who plays the game the right way and can add value in so many different ways, whether it's defensively or offensively. Wendell Carter Jr. is the type of player that you want to build a team with. He's the type of player you want more of. He passes the ball extremely well for a big. He rebounds well. He can protect the rim. Versatile offensive skill set. Can step out, hit a jumper. Good catch and shoot threat. Better post scorer than what he showed last season as well. Good size, good footwork. Very decisive in the low post. Also a threat to pass from the low post as well. It's a multi-dimensional threat. And for the Bulls fans who were not as familiar with Wendell Carter, or maybe not as sure of what he was in college, this weekend was a real eye-opener for Wendell Carter Jr. He's been showing his entire skill set in Vegas so far. I'm not really sure of the stats. I'm not huge on summer league stats at all. So aside from just, you know, being entertained because, hey, basketball, we're not getting real basketball anytime soon. So this is just kind of to hold us over. The things that I look for in summer league is more or less just to compare, or not really to compare, but to confirm what was seen in college. And for me, Wendell Carter Jr. so far in summer league has confirmed what I saw in college. Just an excellent, promising player who's got sneaky high upside. Again, you're probably not going to build your franchise around Wendell Carter Jr. as the number one player. But man, you're going to get just a player who makes lineups better long term. Just makes them better. Wendell Carter Jr. is the type of player who could have 7 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 assists, maybe a steal. Nothing eye-opening on a basic box score. But then you look up and you see that he led the team in plus or minus. You look up and then you see he's high on the list of RPM leaders. You look up and you just see him doing the small things that win basketball games. That's the type of player you're getting with Wendell Carter Jr., and he's showing it in summer league. Just extreme detail in his game. I think one of the big questions that some fans had about Wendell Carter Jr. was his mobility in space when he switches to defend the pick and roll. And boy, has he answered those in spades so far. He's looked great defending the pick and roll. One of my favorite plays of him so far in summer league was switching onto the guard, blocking the shot, running the floor, and one of our guards finds him in the corner for a three-point shot that he does not hesitate on, and he makes it. Another one of my favorite plays. Carter rotates to block a shot with both hands, dribbles the ball up the floor, and finds Blakeney for a three where Blakeney does not make the shot. But again, these plays that Wendell Carter is making, if that's not modern big, I don't know what is. I just wouldn't know what is if that's not what you want from a modern day center. He has nearly everything that you can ask for. He checks so many boxes. Again, I'm just ridiculously high on Wendell Carter at this point. But what he's showing in summer league is extremely promising. When you pair him and Lauri Markkanen up together, man, it's a front court that can be just a mismatch nightmare for teams. Both players can step out and hit jump shots. Both players can move well when they switch on the pick and roll. Both players have above average athleticism. Both players know how to play within a team concept. Both players are just multi-dimensional. They can add value on both sides of the ball. We didn't know how good Lauri Markkanen was defensively last year, but he showed us that he is far ahead defensively than what we initially thought. Lauri Markkanen just looked very solid, moving his feet, staying with guards, contesting shots, wasn't really, you know, out of position a ton. Just very encouraging defense. And now you're pairing that with Wendell Carter, whose defensive instincts are very advanced for a 19-year-old. He just turned 19 a few months ago. That's scary from a fundamental standpoint. When you look at the other bigs in this class, and not to take anything away from DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., Marvin Bagley, Mo Bamba, but when you look at where those players are on instincts and fundamentals, Wendell Carter Jr. has most of them beat. He just has more detail to his game. His basketball IQ is off the charts. And that's what jumps off at the screen to me. And you could tell someone like Doris Burke could see it too. She's excited about Wendell Carter Jr. and just what he adds to this team going forward. I mean, we talk about, you know, athleticism being rare. We talk about length being rare. We talk about shooting ability being rare in some prospects. But not enough gets talked about centers who enter the league with elite basketball IQ already in place. Not enough gets talked about instincts and fundamentals and, you know, players like that entering the league already far above their years in those, you know, categories. And that's what we could potentially be looking at in Wendell Carter Jr. Just very, very fun player to watch. And very encouraging to see what our future front court can become with him and Markkanen going forward. With Chandler Hutchinson, I was definitely impressed with some of what I saw from Chandler Hutchinson. If you listened last week, I'm not too familiar with Hutchinson overall. There are some things that in the limited video that I did get to watch on Hutchinson. I was very impressed with his ability to take it coast to coast, get the rebound, go full court, you know, better athleticism than I would have thought. Can finish at the rim, good size. I mean, 6'7", I think a 7'1 wingspan. Skinnier than I thought, though. I think he's listed below 200 pounds, so he'll definitely need to bulk up long term. But I was encouraged with what I've seen so far from Chandler Hutchinson in the summer league. I love his passing ability. I think he's going to be a very good passer, especially off the pick and roll. You see his ability to get to the basket, and he can either make a finish or he can create for a big. And I think that's good to have from a guy that's 6'7 at the three spot. Defensively, defensively has probably been the most impressive so far that I've seen from Hutchinson. Again, you probably wouldn't mistake him for, you know, somebody like Jimmy Butler from where he was at as a rookie defensively, but I can see the potential in what Chandler Hutchinson can offer defensively. He could potentially be a two-way player long-term if he can polish his defense up a little bit. But I like the mold that, you know, we're working with Hutchinson overall. If the Bulls can leave this draft with two-way players at big positions of need, at small forward with Hutchinson and at center with Wendell Carter Jr., that's going to be a big feat for them. That could really put this rebuild in the right place, even though they still don't have, you know, that one guy that they know they can build this around yet. But in the meantime, if they can kind of, you know, put the group around that potential guy in place, it'll make sense one day. So, again, I'm very encouraged of what I've seen from Hutchinson, extremely ecstatic of what I've seen from Wendell Carter Jr. thus far as well. So I would say so far summer league has been, you know, Bulls fans should be optimistic. You might have two. I mean, you know, you're gonna have something in Wendell Carter Jr. Hutchinson, a 22nd pick overall. Hey, if you can get something positive from that, hey, you're going to tip your cap at the front office and be happy if you can get a long-term contributor from that position. Because that's the biggest position that we have of need right now. So one of the rumors, or some of the rumors that have been going around outside of our own free agents in Zach LaVine and David Nwaba, have been about, or have linked the Bulls to Rodney Hood. I believe there's a Yahoo report that says the Bulls have still been talking to Rodney Hood's agents about a potential deal. Rodney Hood is currently the Cleveland Cavaliers restricted free agent, traded over in that offseason deal with Utah. I think it was a three-team trade. But Rodney Hood didn't look very good in Cleveland, and he didn't look very good in Utah last season either. But at one point, Rodney Hood did seem like a player that had some pretty solid upside for his scoring ability and just a good perimeter shooter as well. So, again, there have been some rumors linking Hood to the Bulls. And, you know, at first you may kind of brush it off because it's kind of early in the free agent process. And a lot of teams are going to use the Chicago Bulls as leverage because the Bulls have a lot of cap space. Right now, assuming the Bulls do renounce their trade exception and they operate as an under the cap team, and I think they would have to renounce Noah Vonleh if they haven't already, the Bulls would probably have close to $19 million in cap space. I think they would have to also waive Paul Zipser and Sean Kilpatrick, but both have non-guaranteed deals as well, so that would be easier to do if they really wanted to do that. So that would lead the Bulls again with $19 million in cap space, which still have, while still having David Nwaba's cap hold as well. So theoretically, the Bulls could make another run at somebody else's free agent. There have been rumors about Jabari Parker as well, who some view as likely to, or maybe not likely, but some view him as a player who could leave if one of these teams that are under the cap makes an offer, because Milwaukee is very close to the luxury tax and teams just don't see them, you know, paying that right now to bring Parker back, who has a lot of questions with durability right now after his second ACL tear. So the question right now is, should the Bulls be chasing another free agent? When we're talking about the Bulls being in a rebuild, the logical mindset you would think is that this team probably needs more high draft picks, that they don't need to use all of their money right now, that they just need to develop what they have and make sure that the pieces that they've invested in from draft capital work out, instead of, you know, hitching their, you know, hitching themselves to another team's free agent. Now, Jabari Parker, I believe, is still 23 years old. Rodney Hood is 25. So both players do fit a youth movement. They would fit the window of what we have. But the fear with that is that by adding, there's two things. By adding these players, one, they take you out of position to really tank for a high pick again. So the chances of really getting a superstar talent with a high pick decrease. And you're decreasing that in exchange to take a flyer on somebody like Jabari Parker or Rodney Hood. And would you view any of those players as, you know, having all-star upside right now? I don't see it with Parker or Hood. And the other part of that is that I don't think Parker or Hood really fit this team basketball-wise at all. I look at Jabari Parker and Rodney Hood as two players who can definitely score. Nobody will question their ability to score buckets. They can get them. And if you pair them with Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, hey, all of a sudden you have three players that can get some points. But the fit is what is important here. And if we're to prioritize lineups and how we can improve our lineups long term, because that was a big thing with the Bulls last season, just did not have lineups that worked. Aside from off the bench, they did not have lineups that worked. The starting unit got killed a lot. So you're always coming from behind. You're always trailing, and it's largely because you have lineups that just don't fit. So what do you need at small forward? We can go back to our discussion about Chandler Hutchinson and what he could potentially offer one day if he pans out as a draft pick, as, you know, you want a forward who can defend. You want a small forward who doesn't need to hang his hat on scoring 18 or 19 points a game to have value. You want a small forward like the Memphis Grizzlies have Kyle Anderson now. And while Kyle Anderson doesn't have great upside or anything like that, nobody will mistake Kyle Anderson for a future All-Star. Kyle Anderson has had a positive impact on lineups and winning games the past few seasons with the Spurs. His defense has improved dramatically. He entered the NBA as a player who was mostly, you know, a distributor with size, almost like a 6'8", 6'9" point guard. Very slow, not extremely athletic, but, you know, he'd get players good shots. His three ball was developing, but now he's gotten to the point where his defense has become one of his strong suits. So if Kyle Anderson was a free agent, still, we know he's with the Grizzlies now. Kyle Anderson would be the type of player that you would want at the three if you were to pursue that route of taking somebody else's free agent. Because you know Kyle Anderson doesn't need to score 18 a game to have value. Kyle Anderson can defend his position at a high level. Kyle Anderson will rebound well. Kyle Anderson will pass the ball really well. And if his three ball becomes consistent too, then you're talking about an extremely valuable player who will easily outplay his, I think he's making about $9 million a year now with the Grizzlies, and the Spurs decide not to match. That's a value. And that's the type of value that the Chicago Bulls need at the three if they're going to put this lineup with newly re-signed Zach LaVine, with Lauri Markkanen, who they want to get more shots, with Chris Dunn, who they still believe in. That's the type of player that they need at the three. They basically need, to me, I think they need a small forward version of Wendell Carter Jr. To me, if you have a small forward version of Wendell Carter Jr. at small forward, in addition to already having him at center, and then you have Chris Dunn's defense at point guard, you're going to have three premium defenders at point guard, small forward, and center, which is excellent. And then you just need to get the offense on the same page with LaVine and Markkanen, who I would assume would be your top threats in that lineup. But if you go the opposite way and prioritize somebody like Jabari Parker or Rodney Hood, it just becomes redundant, because then you're talking about another player who has a history of being a net negative, another player who needs to score points, another player who cannot defend his position that well. That's just tough to build strong lineups around long term. And I get why fans are interested, because you see that, you know, this former number two overall pick in Parker is available right now. You see that somebody like Rodney Hood, who the Bulls, I believe, passed on in that Doug McDermott draft. A lot of people liked him. I mean, you see these players available now, and it's almost like, hey, we can have what we should have had in Rodney Hood. Or, man, we can have, you know, this prospect in Jabari Parker, who was viewed as the next Carmelo Anthony at one point. We can have that. Like, there still might be potential there. And that potential takes a while to really wear off. But in a way, it's just kind of, it's misleading. It's fool's gold. Or bull's gold, you know, like the podcast. But it's fool's gold to me. It's just, you want it, but you shouldn't have it. Because it just doesn't fit with what we have and what we're trying to build. We need to focus on putting our most important players in the right position to have big value. And to me, adding a player like Rodney Hood or Jabari Parker just wouldn't do it. To me, David Nwaba, if David Nwaba was a small forward, I think David Nwaba would probably put them in better position to do it, because I know David Nwaba doesn't need the ball to add value. So again, long term, I really do think that we have to get away from the idea of adding another, you know, primary scorer next to Zach LaVine at small forward. And I think we just need to find, you know, a two-way small forward there. I mean, man, if we could have Mikal Bridges there, that would just fit perfectly into what I'm talking about. Just a number of players like a Robert Covington or an Otto Porter there. You know, that is what we need at small forward. So hopefully, from my standpoint, I'm hoping that the Bulls don't go down that route with Hood or Parker, and that, you know, they just develop what they have. They don't need, it's not necessary. But it was a busy week for the Chicago Bulls, and hopefully I covered everything in episode 2 of Bulls Gold. I will see you guys for episode 3 next week. This has been Edward Schuler. Later.